Hello and welcome in to another episode of Podcast 63, Season 2, Episode 9. Hey Lou, how many home games have we played so far?
Not enough.
Not enough. How many have you been to?
I've been to zero.
This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Crappy Friends. It's also sponsored by DayQuil and NyQuil. Do not adjust your volume. I know I sound like crap. I'm going through some cold-like symptoms, but that doesn't mean that our blurs aren't still playing some games. So make sure to stay tuned, listen in, and don't forget, go Blurs.
He jumps, he passes out to Hunter, Hunter shoots, off the rim, Brown gets the score, it's over, we won the ball game, Iona won the ball game, oh, we won, 60-58.
All right, Lou. So before we get into basketball news, we have some other sports teams that we've talked about a little bit here and there, but I want to make sure to shout out both our girls and our boys soccer programs.
Woo-hoo!
Why don't you tell the listeners what those two teams accomplished this week?
Yeah, so last week, the women's soccer team clinched for the NCAA tournament. Sadly, as we record today, they lost yesterday, I believe, to Hofstra, but they made it to the first round, and then actually, as of yesterday on Sunday, our men's team clinched against the undefeated Missouri State to go to the NCAA tournament. It was a double OT shootout, and it was a great game. The highlights were amazing. Actually, I think I saw a tweet that said we were the 14th school ever to have their men and women's soccer team in the same year.
For this year. There's like 14 teams total this year.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Yeah, so we're 14th this year to have both men's and women's soccer team go to the NCAA tournament. For the women, back-to-back years. Men, it's two out of the last 3 years.
Yeah, I believe that's
true. So it's really cool to see Loyola and Athletics just have a championship vibe, and I think that really shows throughout the whole school, and then that will, you see that, you see crowds at the soccer games, then you hopefully bring the crowd to the men's game. Like, maybe I'll show up to a game.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be fun.
So, yeah. We know Saturday could have used my help, but maybe we'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah, we'll see you up in the rafters, Lou.
Of course.
In other news, this past week, Evansville, our fellow Missouri Valley Conference.
Oh, really? We're talking Evansville. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, they decided to beat Kentucky at, is it the Rupp Arena? The Rupp Arena. I think they went by like 3 or 2. It was a close game.
Yeah, no, they came down in the last few seconds. It was a great game. Again, is KJ Riley was amazing.
DeAndre Williams.
Yeah. And then Sam Coughlin, the transfer from Kansas. Mm-hmm. So again, as we've said, this team we didn't really put on high radar. I know I personally kept saying Sam Coughlin might have a good year. Mm-hmm. Did not know about KJ Riley. We knew DeAndre Williams is an odd kind of path to college basketball starter, mm-hmm. but they have an interesting team. In the works.
Yeah.
I think it was a great game, and also just for those who may not know, Walter McCarty, the head coach of Evansville, he is from Evansville, Indiana, but he actually decided to go play his college ball at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the first time he was back in a basketball setting at the Rupp Arena, and he beat his four alma mater. So I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, a huge win for any Missouri Valley Conference team to defeat the number one team at their stadium.
Yeah,
so.
No, definitely. And then Missouri Valley teams, I also just want to kind of talk about the Missouri State Xavier game.
That was
a great game, but also a rule that I'm going to talk about, at least in that came up a lot
in
our game against St. Joe's, was how the Missouri State Xavier game ended.
Mm-hmm.
So as those who know, Missouri State was only down by, I think, one at the time, and they decided to take a three. And it was a corner three, and he was getting defended on. And I don't know off the top of my head who took the shot for Missouri State, but it looked like he was touched by the defender, but then all of a sudden kind of a flop happened, and kind of led into a flop. And the referees called a technical foul,
mm-hmm.
and that allowed Xavier to take a shot, make the free throw, and the possession. So then they went up by two, which then forced Missouri State to take a difficult three for the win, which they end up missing twice.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk later. But yeah, this kind of new ruling that the NCAA wants to stop flopping is kind of an interesting one. We're seeing all over Twitter after Missouri State game, people were like confused what's going on, but now they understand the new rule. But their NCAA is trying to stop flopping. So the main gist of it is if they referee up to their discretion feels that an offensive player really force their way to fall out, they're going to call a technical foul on Floppy.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw that in the Missouri State Xavier game, and then we'll talk later on about our instances in the St. Joe's game.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of Missouri Valley Conference news, and since games are going on, there's always opportunities for different teams to have good games and some trap games as well, like we saw with Loyola. And I think that's going to be the segue into our first segment, which talk about the Coppin State game. Unfortunately,
do we have to talk about?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't get paid to do this, but we still have to do this.
Yes.
I'm only here so I don't get fined. So unfortunately, we dropped that game to Coppin State. It was a rough one.
The nice way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, going into it, I honestly was a little nervous. And then when I got there and saw that we had only 8 healthy scholarship players, the nerves really kicked in. Just because, I mean, yeah, we weren't missing any of our, like, key, you know, we weren't missing Crud or Lucas or anyone like that, but, you know, those role players really add up, and then you only have 8 healthy bodies, and then on top of that, the rotation got trimmed down to pretty much 6 guys by halftime. So, you know, it was a really physical game, which is another thing that I think we struggle with from time to time, is big physical athletic teams. And I think everything just added up to unfortunately have our Loyola Ramblers lose that ball game. We were up at halftime. We were up 38-31. So, you know, going into halftime with a 7-point lead, you're feeling pretty comfortable. And then I think even in the second half, there was an instance where a Coppin State player got a double technical foul, was ejected from the ball game. Loyola got 4 free throws and the ball. And you know that's a big deal, and we just couldn't carry over that momentum. Had you know, the highlight immediately jumps off the stat sheet is Tate Hall. 23 points, really really impressive game from him. 23 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. Really impressive ball game from him.
Yeah, no, I think that was a response to his game against Furman.
Mm-hmm.
For those you know, Tate Hall kind of led the turnover. Early on in the Furman game, and this game he had 0 turnovers. And I think that's the biggest thing for him is being confident with controlling the ball. 3 for 6 from 3 is a great thing to see.
Played 38 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that was, in my opinion, a great way to see that after a really brutal game, he came back and fought, but he didn't really find... And again, do I think it was on him? No, I think our team this year is not going to be one single player.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be, of course, as everyone says, the team game, but especially... If Krautwig's not having it, we need guys to step up. I think that's a good segue to talk about the starting lineup because we do have a change.
I was actually going to bring that up.
Yeah, so stepping up, we had Jalen Pipkins start over Marquise Kennedy, which I 100% wholly, wholly disagree with.
Yeah, I don't know. There might be some behind the scenes, maybe.
Yeah.
Coach thought something happened in practice, or maybe Marquise was showed up late to the game. Or
maybe with... So then, also was on a positive side, you could think maybe because you only have 8
right.
players, you need a guy to really take off the bench, come off the bench healthy, and maybe you don't need to have Kennedy filled in with all the other scorers because you need to come off the bench.
I guess, yeah. It's weird for me to kind of mess up especially a freshman's routine of
so
like
early
okay,
in the season.
Yeah. So this is you know he's used to you start the exhibition game plus the next 2 games and then. You decide not to start him, and then the very next ball game, you go back and Kennedy's starting again. Just really weird to throw off his rhythm. You know, players they feed off routine. They get to the stadium, they know exactly what's going to happen, and they're creatures of habit. A lot of them are, especially. So something I completely 100% disagree with. If I saw Porter Moser, I would tell it to his face. Like, hey, I just don't think it was a smart decision.
My percentage right now on decision making was 80% bad decision, 20% I would like to know if it was because of the only 8 healthy scholarship players.
Yeah.
But again, is that I don't want that, and we won't know. But maybe that's just kind of a fallout answer, and that's just a backup.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're gonna talk about the new starter who started in that game, which again is we'll track that because he then didn't follow and started St. Joe's, but. Jalen Pipkins went 3 for 10 from field goal, so that's kind of tough to see for a guy who's starting. You're going 30%, but also taking 10 shots and really not making much.
Mm-hmm.
1 for 4 from 3, 2 for 4 from free throw. So Again, it wasn't a game of turnovers for us. We had 14 total, but as a total, that's not bad. I think, again, is leading, not just talking about his field goal, Lucas Williams went 2 for 12. But we got to talk about Lucas going 0 for 8 from 3.
It's horrible.
And not only did we shoot 19% in the whole game, we went 0 for 8 in the whole second half. Mm. We shot 0% from 3. And I think that kind of, in a way, is the way we're being coached. I think that's just who we have coaching, and also the game plan is we expect to shoot threes.
Mm-hmm.
I want to save this for the St. Joe's game, but I do want to talk about how I think Lucas does not need to shoot threes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if you're wide open, take it, but do I find him more valuable driving and getting an and-one, or him and Krutwig doing a give-and-go? Yes. But then I think if you want, do we want to answer that question?
Yeah, yeah.
Or do
we
want to save it for the...
Yeah, yeah, no, we can talk about it now. Someone wrote in and asked, kind of half kidding, but was saying, is there anything we can do to help our shooting woes? Is there anything... And I think he suggested, hiring a new coach or kind of as a joke, I think. At least that's how I took it.
Understood,
but
yeah.
I think, it's a legitimate question. It's been 4 games plus the exhibition, and our 3-point shooting has looked... not good at best. I think they even asked Porter in this post-game interview about it, and Porter said something along the lines of, I know it's an issue, but I don't think it's a big enough issue to address it yet because I know we have good shooters. Well, I think it's our job as podcast people to talk about it. So, Lou, what do you think is going wrong with the shooting? What do you think? Is there anything we can do to help it?
So, shooting-wise, I think... If people really want to think this year was a sign of the bad times, we got to look back to last year, actually, kind of starting the trend. Clay didn't shoot as great as he normally does. Marcus Towns didn't shoot. The only one who was great was Cooper, and as you can see, is Cooper's not playing this year,
mm-hmm.
as we know. So that is a direct correlation, I think, that we don't have that skill of three there.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas is supposed to be somewhat a three-point shooter. Do I think he should? No. I think he's great at driving. He's a long, lengthy guy. I think he can get to the rim better.
Mm-hmm.
Bruno's supposed to be a three, but you don't really see him starting. St. Joe's we kind of saw a little bit different, but we got to talk about this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having a coach, we did lose Brian Mullins, and we got to admit that that's leaving a hole, and you can see it, because I think ball movement is a little hesitant and a little shaky because we don't have that point guard coach. So that would be my answer of coaching-wise is, we don't have an experienced point guard.
Yeah.
Heavy coach, and people can say Porter played point guard, but again, Mullins played in the NCAA tournament as a point guard, played from Missouri Valley team, so we kind of knew what to expect, and I think that's what helped a lot with our point guards.
I also think that our personnel is way different this year than the past years, the abilities of our team, and I don't know if it's being used correctly yet. Maybe it's a trial and error thing,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not going to call for Porter's head yet, but I think later on in the season we're still running the same offense, then something's wrong, because we do have quicker guys, we have more athletic guys, so guys get up and down the court. Doesn't mean that we need to take the ball and run every single time, but a little faster paced offense, maybe having more guys crash the boards on offense because they're more athletic and they're faster, so they can get back on defense quicker. But I don't think we have that, we don't have that same team personnel that we did 2 years ago. And I'm hoping that Porter figures that out pretty quickly, because I think these guys are talented. They're just talented in different ways. And additionally, I think the one guy that could help in a way that you wouldn't normally see, so obviously on the court, is our point guard that's out, Keith Clemens. A point guard that knows how to pass someone open and knows how to find guys open is a big difference maker. And I think Marquise Kennedy has done a great job of filling in and being a guy that you can look to when you need a bucket. But he's not that facilitator yet. And he's not the guy that's going to always be trying to find players open for three or passing guys open for three.
No, I think that's a great point for me to bring up. The idea of, I think reality, it shows that our point guards are not as strong as what they've been in the past recently, because Krutwig is our leading assist guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's nothing wrong. You can't say there's really an issue, but it is interesting when the total amount of assists is 29 from Cameron Krutwig, the next guy is here at 12.
Yeah.
And then everyone else is in the single digits. So ball movement is something that, again, is, I think, not having that point guard coach that was an amazing coach because now he's a head coach is something that we got to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I lastly really just, I think, a stat that I feel like kind of came off for me in this game was just that how we let them score 45 points in the second half.
We got out-physical. We did.
Yeah,
I think
that's a connection to Furman scoring 53 in the second half. So, and again, as we've had an upside to this podcast because we're going to talk about a good thing that happened.
Right.
But we got to address that with these lesser teams, we let them do things that just make us look small. And we let Furman drop 53 points against us, and 53 was double some team score in the first week of college basketball. So I think to address our second half defense, and again, as we only had 8 healthy guys. Okay,
yeah.
I get that. So these guys are tired, and there's that load management question. But we don't have time for load management when we only have 8 guys. Do I think maybe it's time to give a breather of a big man, put in a walk-on? Maybe. I think down the stretch you're going to need, and I think that's what it was for this game. For me, it was down the stretch. It was the score. We only lost by 4, but
right.
we let them score 45 points. In the-
Going off of that like big man thought, it's really telling to me that when you have 8 healthy guys, Tom Welch played 5 minutes total. Only in the first half, I believe. I don't think he got it in the second half until maybe the very, very end. But it's very telling. I love Tom. I think he's one hell of an athlete. I think he's going to be a fantastic basketball player at Loyola. But I think that especially with bigger guys coming into college basketball, there is a physicality, athletic difference between high school and college basketball. And I just think that Tom Welch is seeing that curve right away. And I think he's just going to – it's going to take some time for him. And but very telling in a game like this where you have 8 healthy players – you see your backup big guy get 5 minutes. It's a little bit of a bummer, but I mean, I think Porter's doing the best with what he's got. But yeah, any other takeaways? I mean, we didn't really talk too much about different player stat lines. I mean, Tate had a great game. Cam ended up having a good game. He only shot the ball 9 times, which again, I still would like to see him shoot a little bit more.
But he did drop 8. So the thing is, with that, he had 18 points and 6 assists. Again, he led the team in assists.
12 rebounds.
12 rebounds, so a double-double again for Krutwig there. I think we need to start maybe doing a double-double watch.
Yeah, someone needs to create a Twitter account like Porter Jacket, Porter's Tie, Cameron Krutwig, double-double watch.
There we go. But I think the big things if we're going to go stat line has to be Jalen Pipkins and Lucas Williamson combined for a beautiful 5 of 22.
1 for 12 from 3.
1 for 12 from 3, yeah. So I think of 6 for 8 from free throw, but again, those are the things that I think Lucas really needs to. And again, as I think it might have shown in the St. Joe's, which will answer our hopefully questions and concerns. But yeah, Tom Welch, if we're going to look stat line, played 5 minutes, took 2 shots and missed them both, took 1 3, which I don't really remember the 3 if you remember, but.
I don't really either.
Yeah, so maybe you're supposed to go to Bruno. Bruno has no 3, so I'd expect Tom Welch not to shoot a 3. But again, it's the 3 for 10, 2 for 12, stuff like that I think is an outlier. And then ultimately we went 0% from 3 in the second half. So
really good games from Tate Hall and Cameron Krutwig, and that's it. That's really it. I mean, Kennedy didn't play that well.
Yeah.
Lucas didn't play that well. Ugwak did not play that well. Like, this was kind of our problem last year, was we had 2 players produce, and then we're always looking for a 3rd. And that's what this problem, unfortunately, on this day was. So, you know, I think coming off that loss, my thoughts were like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. This is the one team we should have beaten. But I was really interested to see what they would do after that and how they would change. Did you have any lasting thoughts about the game or...
No, I think it was just a tough one. I expected definitely more to come from a team that just lost to Furman. But again, as we're running kind of the same offense, and I think I talked about that with the Furman podcast, was that we just see the same systems being run. And I think it's a different, yes, Krutwig and Lou Williamson were there last year, but I think the other guys around them are so different that they need to kind of filter a system where Lucas is driving more and Cam's doing give and goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just mainly what we hopefully see more of.
Yeah. Yeah, so unfortunately dropped this ball game 76-72. And then our next game was against St. Joe's. So stay with us, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. Thanks.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, that's hot, but I want another bite.
My mouth's burning, listeners. Okay. I love talking Loyola Rambler basketball.
And we're back. So, on the flip side of our proverbial coin, we had a really good game. Not only did we come out victorious, but it was a really entertaining game. It was one that
Was it entertaining because we won?
Well, yeah, but it was also... It was a close game until, you know, like 10 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago. Okay. But it was fun. I really kind of didn't expect to win this game. And I think we kind of talked about how we almost would have rather won the Coppin State game.
And the Furman game.
Yeah, and lost this game just for our own sanity because we knew that St. Joe's was pretty good. St. Joe's was just coming off a win.
Big win.
At UConn.
19 points. Or no, yeah. Sorry. They scored total 96 points.
Mm-hmm. Against a UConn team that then went on to beat Florida, who was ranked at the time. So, anyway, it all made for a game that I wasn't expecting to win.
No, I think if we go back, and listeners, if you dare, care to go back, but mm-hmm. I think this was one of our games that we did say on our preseason that mm-hmm. this would be a loss, and it would mm-hmm. be one of the losses that would hopefully change how we played and kind of tell us, oh, hey, we've played easy teams, but again, it's the easy teams that really caught us off guard.
So, I read something pretty funny. It's not haha funny, but it's interesting funny. The score at halftime of this game was 45-42.
Okay.
We were losing. And that was the final score of the game from last year that we lost when we were at the Pavilion?
Oh, it's St. Joe's in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's actually, okay. I don't know if it's funny. It's interesting.
It's pretty weird, yeah. So then we went on to win this ball game 85-68. We, in the second half, we then won the second half by 20 points. We scored 43, and they only scored 23. So, ended up winning by 17. Some of the highlights of the box score, Cam led the team with 24 points, 7 assists, and 3 rebounds. We'll get into why he only had 3 rebounds.
We'll get into why he didn't get a double-double. That's the issue.
Yes. To go along with Cam's 24 points, both Tate Hall and Marquise Kennedy had 16 apiece. And then rounding out guys with double digits, here Ugwak finished with 12 points, 3 rebounds, and 5 assists. So a pretty strong showing from 4 of the 5 guys in the starting lineup. Unfortunately, Lucas struggled again, only had 9 points, started the game 0-for-4 from 3 before finally hitting a 3-pointer in the second half, I believe. And then on the bench, Paxson had 6 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and Bruno did find his way into the score sheet with a layup of his own to finish with 2 points. So, really starting lineup led the way here. It was an interesting ball game. The first half, it seemed like St. Joe's couldn't miss from 3. I think they shot something like 55% from 3 in the first half, or like 60%, close to that.
They shot 51.
51% from 3.
Oh, 56 from 3, 51 from field goal.
Okay. Their big guy, I think Funk, F-U-N-K, in the first half, I think he hit 4 threes, something close to that. He was really killing us. He was probably 6'10", 6'11", and I think he hit one from like 30 feet out, like 10 feet back from the 3-point line. And he was really killing us. And that was him as well as a couple of their guards were hitting some threes. And we were really struggling. But, yeah, Lou, what do you have to add to that?
So I think that's a great segue to my – and, again, this game was a huge upside. I think I can't deny that there were great things to see. And that's – we got a W against, I think, a credible team.
Mm-hmm.
Does it suck that we've lost to 2 teams that were very below
beatable.
Average?
Yeah. Beatable.
Very beatable, yes. No, that's a great way to say it. But – we got to talk about that whole guarding the 3 from big man.
Yeah.
I think the great example was Furman. We just did not want to.
They had two different big guys,
but again, is their biggest guy was a 3-point, and we're not saying sniper, but he wasn't afraid to put it up.
Yeah.
And I think closing out the three is going to be our Achilles heel. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be our kryptonite. Because, and there's a great clip, and I was trying to show it to you, and this wasn't really a big man, but if you go early on, I think it's about 7 minutes in the game, you can go to ESPN3, and that, again, as Buck points out, I haven't been to games, so that's how I watched it. But I was able to watch the game and see how it went, and I saw there was a section where Cameron Krubik literally grabbed Marquise Kennedy's jersey on his side and pushed him forward. Mm-hmm. To go step up to guard the three. And as that happened, 2 seconds later, Cam's big man that he was guarding stands in front of Kennedy, picks him, and then Kennedy's man jumps behind the big man for the easy three.
He did miss it.
He did miss it, but I did see that exact spot of a three. So it's the high elbow three that for some reason we're just spreading ourselves too far apart from the ball. And you would think Furman kind of taught us that if we see a big guy shoot, we shouldn't really light up. I think you can kind of go back to our Missouri State game last year where we just kind of let them shoot, even though...
It's a common pattern, and we've talked about it many, many times, is that's the thing we struggle with, is bigger guys who can shoot. It's not the guards. Like, I think we're athletic enough, and our guards and Lucas and Marquise and Paxson and, you know, whoever, to get out there. I'm not too worried about that, but it's when any of their, like, four or five guys, their bigger guys, can shoot threes, and... we did. We struggled really bad in the first half, but I do think that going into the second half and throughout the second half, we did a much better job. Not maybe, you know, I even in the score sheet, but I think just from a technical standpoint, we were getting out on their guys. We were defending Cameron specifically, which I have not seen him do until yesterday or till the game on Saturday. He was getting up on their bigger guys and getting out there, and I think he was really worried in the first half about he needs to be the guy that rebounds, so he wasn't getting all the way out there. But in the second half, he did. He got up into the shooters, got up in their faces, and it made a difference. And I'm hopeful that that is some progress that is going to be made, and we'll hopefully continue to see it as the season goes on against some of the teams in our, specifically in our conference, that have athletic big guys who can shoot. So that's one thing that we saw, as something that's important. It's we've seen it in the past, and I'm sure we're going to get to see it in the future. Continuing on, something that I always check in the scorebook is how many shots Krutwig took, and he took 18, and I love to see that. 11 of 18, a good percentage. Unfortunately, Lou, he did take 1 3-pointer and missed the 3-pointer. So, your preseason prediction of, took a hit there. I think you predicted him to like make 33% of his threes or something like that. I think I said
three threes.
Maybe, yeah, probably.
Definitely I said two, a double of what he made last year.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was kind of for those true fans, and I'm not saying who listen aren't true fans, but old, let's say OG fans, Carson Shanks kind of similarly took a three from nearly that same spot.
Yep.
And it was a similar situation. This one earlier in the game, but again, shot clock running down. And Cameron, great form, I have to say. He got his feet up above, and he looked like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
But he missed it. So, again, do I expect much? No. But do I expect when we need a clutch shot against you and I in a corner three situation wide open? I'm going to expect Cameron Crowe to make it because I know he will.
Yeah.
It was interesting events, I think. I think this game, did we shoot amazing from three? No. But did we shoot better than the games before? Yes.
And we had some timely shots. We had...
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Specifically Marquise. I actually don't think he had made a three before this game, unless he made one in the Furman game, but I can't recall. No one had a good game against Furman. But Marquise had two, and more specifically, he was 2 of 3, and I think that's what's impressive. He took made 2 of his 3 shots.
Yeah, so. And just to add on, that was his first two ever collegiate three-pointers. He took 6 before that and missed them all, but the thing is, that's the thing, it's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So
they actually looked better, too, because we had been talking about how he has a side spin on his shot. I'd be actually interested to go back and look at the video on his three-pointers, but they looked better. They looked prettier. Like, they looked more fluid. So hopefully, we're not looking for him to make a bunch of three-pointers, but a couple here and there can make a big difference, because then it'll force the defender to come out and guard him on the three-point line, and it'll give him more room to drive to the basket and do those fancy finishes that we love to see. He had the first basket of the game, it was an and one that he had. It was beautiful, and it was a hell of a way to start a basketball game. But he played really well. Some of the other guys that played super well in that game, both Tate and Marquise, finished with 16. Tate wasn't looking to score the ball as much in the first half, and then really looked to score in the second half, and did finish with 16, which I think was good. I think we've seen him do better, and not one of his best games, but I definitely think is solid, and we're going to need him to score 16 or 15 a game, because we're going to need his scoring. Marquise, on the other hand, also finished with 16. Had both an impressive game offensively, also finished with a steal and two blocks, which were very, very different blocks I wanted to talk about a little bit. One was on a layup, he came over and helped, and just smacked the absolute crap out of the ball. Really fun to watch. And then another one was he closed out on a three-pointer and made a really athletic play to get a block on a three-point shot, a little tip, and I think it actually led to a steal. So Marquise was that one of the things that we talked about before he came, before he committed, was that he is one of the best defensive guards that a lot of recruiters have seen in a long time, and that's starting to show up in the games. And then, did you want to comment on either Tate or Marquise's games?
Yeah, no, I think Marquise is, I think it's good, I kind of want to segue, is that he got back in the starting lineup. I think that's something that we need to see, in quite honestly, those two threes I think are very important, because those are the most threes by any player we had on the team. And that was 50% of our made threes. Again, is for me, I know we haven't talked about him yet, but I think I'm going to segue. I'm just going to state it here. I need Lucas to stop shooting so many threes.
Yeah.
But to Tate Hall's concern, Tate Hall put up 16 points. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great response to his 23 point game. Mm-hmm. Again, the game before.
I think he had 23.
Yeah. So, again, it's 6 for 12 from field goal. That's 50%. So that's not too terrible. Again, it's
pretty good.
In his past two games, he only has one turnover. And from the Furman game, we know he had a lot. So I think that's a nice, easy way to kind of get back into things.
Also, four steals for Tate Hall.
So that was that's a great point, because Tate Hall, and then now I can easily segue into Lucas, both had four steals.
Yeah.
They both had four steals. And that shows you, when we have long, kind of tall, big guys around the perimeter playing on ball defense, you can see a poke or a little tap out there. And that's where I think it's better for them to be. Tate Hall maybe in the three, and again, this is our first really glimpse of him playing, but I would like to see them more toward the rim. And I think that would be
great.
Get
out in the fast break.
Yeah, get out in the fast break, and then you see them drive. Also, Lucas, put up the ball as a layup. You don't need a dunk. For those who don't know what we're talking about, Lucas missed a confusing trying to dunk on a fast break, but yet he had the wide open layup. He had a man trailing him. I understand.
Fortunately for the teams, whoever it was, like, it might have been, I think it was Marquise maybe. I don't remember. Whoever was trailing him did get the rebound.
Yeah, exactly. So we're happy to see us there.
Yeah.
I think the only thing with Tate Hall is that I like to see the consistency of putting up points.
Mm-hmm.
I like the defense. Again, is this game, I think those four steals from each him, Tate Hall, and Lucas shows that we got them to 24 turnovers.
Mm.
And a stat.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm saying. So.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so
I did not know that.
They had 14 turnovers in the second half, which I think is huge, because then for me the biggest stat of it all, and I think is an underlying stat, is we had 17 points off turnovers in the second half.
Yeah.
To their two. We both had 8 points each in the first half off turnovers. But again, this connects to Furman. How many points did they have off our turnovers? So when you play a consistent defense and you let the offense just happen, and you don't really force it like we've been doing, the defense can dictate how the game goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge point.
Yeah. I think the last guy that was really impressive was Ugwak. 12 points, only 3 rebounds, 5 assists. But 5 for 8 from the field, hit both of his free throws. He looked really good. He looked like he was trying to find his own shot. He had a really impressive drive to the hoop for a crazy highlight dunk. which is what we've wanted to see out of him for a long time. Really stepped it up, played some good defense. I was impressed with him. I think if we get 12 points from him every time out, I love it. I would take it every time. The last guy that, just talking about the bench here now, the guy who got the most minutes was Paxson Wojcik. He played 21 after he was unfortunately injured for the game against Coppin State. So good to see him back. He looked healthy. He looked great. He looked high energy. I know you're not as impressed with him. But I'm really impressed with him. I think because
okay, keep going. Yeah, I hate that. I understand.
I don't want to hedge your bet or hedge your opinion here. But I was not expecting anything from Paxson this year. And I think he's a great high-energy guy. I think he's great on defense. You don't have to, like, worry about him. I think he always knows where he's supposed to be. You know, he's going to make freshman mistakes. But I think he's – I trust him. Out of all the guys coming off the bench right now, I trust him the most.
Okay, so this is where we're going to little disagree.
No, that's great. Please tell me.
Of course you can have only three guys to pick from off the bench.
There's four.
Healthy?
Right now.
Okay, so we're going to say four guys. So you have a chance
Welch,
of picking...
Welch, Skoknut, Pipkins, and...
Yeah, Celtics. So you have 25% chance to hopefully one of them is good. Okay, I don't think that's...
Who are you taking, then?
I'm not going to take... If we're really... If we're going to talk about it, I'd say, do I trust? I don't trust any of them.
Okay.
But again, we've only played four games.
Right.
So here's the thing yes, freshman mistakes. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about, again, we saw a little flusters... of Paxson fumbling a little rebounds here and
for
there.
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah, do I wish Tom Welch had those minutes and showed a little bit more dominance? But, again, I'm hoping because we don't have a Frank. Yeah. And, again, I'm hoping Paxson is something because
Clemens
we don't. But I'm also hoping Paxson is something because that's what Cooper was last year. Cooper was the guy off the bench
right.
who was a great guy off the bench.
And we didn't expect anything from him last
exactly.
year.
Exactly. But this year I did not expect anything from Paxson. But, again, is now because we need bodies, we need guys to step up. Porter's great phrases, next guy up.
Mm-hmm.
We need that kind of, not dedication to the ball all the time, but again, people can easily connect this to. Cooper could not play defense when he was a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good scorer, but he hustled, though. So the thing is, do I have high hopes for Paxson? Yes. Do I see a little issues? Yes. But again, he's doing some things, we've only played four games, so I can't...
And he's only played three.
Exactly, because he was... Yeah, that see to him bounce back from injury, that was great. I don't know how severe the injury was, but
yeah.
I think it's a little tough for us to... And even myself, but I do worry about... Definitely Welch right now. I think if I had to worry about someone, I just want to make sure Welch isn't going down a path where we see a recently power forward. We have a history of backup power forwards kind of giving a shadow over the starters.
Mm-hmm.
And when Frank comes back healthy, I don't want to see the shadow being cast even taller, no pun intended. But the fact that these guys stand big and play big, we need Welch to build that momentum.
Yeah.
And I think that's where my concern is. Definitely Paxson, I think, is another glue guy, maybe you could say.
Yeah,
another
definitely.
Guy with hustle and passion. But again, I'm more, not worried, but I'm concerned about the play of Tom Welch moving forward.
That worry is valuable or true, because this game he played 3 minutes and the game before that he played 5 minutes and you know, like,
is that on him or is that on Porter?
I want to
ask a question.
Yeah,
for those listening, do we think it's Porter should let Welch play more? Or is it that he's not doing enough in the 5 minutes that he's playing in the three? What is it? Should he? Again, it's like we say: if you shoot more, do you make more? Yeah, but again, is at what cost? So,
and I know it's kind of a cop out, but I do think it's a little bit of both. I don't think Tom's playing all that great, especially the first couple games that he played, both the opener and then against Furman when he did get a significant amount of minutes. But I don't think there's enough body of work to tell that he is not playing well. And maybe it's the teams are going against, like the personnel they have. Maybe Porter doesn't think that he matches up well against them. But unfortunately, I do think when the two guys, specifically Clemens and Frank, come back, it looks like he is unfortunately going to not play as much. Unfortunate, but...
I think that's what's going to end up happening.
But again, as we don't know with injuries right now, Cooper we know is out, so we need a whole kind of a fill.
The only two guys are Frank and Keith.
Yeah, so we don't know how the timeline's going. We have an estimate. Again, as I did think we said Frank, we might not see him until after the fall tournament.
I think they're both. We're hoping that they can get back by the tournament. So that's some.
So I think the tournaments though is going to be our biggest hit with this because we have so many games.
Yeah.
Right after each other, I think that's where it's going to be. And I think, though, when we get a healthy roster, if we do have one, the main concern is going to be more about how we fuse these guys to fit in.
Right.
Than about what they can do because, yeah, they might stand there, but I don't know where they're going to fit in properly.
Yeah. So kind of maybe just to cap this all off, the last question we had was who – so far to this point, we've only played four games, but you can include the exhibition as well. Who has been the biggest surprise, like in a positive way, and then who has been the biggest disappointment for you so far? Lou, what do you think?
Biggest surprise would have to be Tate Hull. Mm-hmm. I think for me, as people might be like, well, what about Marquise Kennedy? I have all my heart. Mm-hmm. I'm the number one biggest Marquise Kennedy fan, so I expected this from Marquise Kennedy. But Tate Hall did not expect, I'll be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. And it's not that his shooting. I did say I like the idea that's tall, 6'6". Again, he might peak at 6'7", shooting guard. But I didn't expect the kind of little scrappy play. Again, as you kind of saw the issue with that with the turnovers against Furman. But he likes to kind of be a part of the game. He doesn't wait for everything. He tries to go to the ball. He kind of gradually takes control. So I think that has to be a big surprise to me. And then again, is a disappointment would have to just be, and there's nothing hard on this. I think it's just going to change. Would have to be Tom Welch.
Okay.
Just because we're giving him minutes, and it's a role I think he can fill, but he's not filling it the way, and again, you could say freshman, but here's the thing is, he's the only power forward off our bench.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two guys who start our power forwards, and we have no one else.
Mm-hmm.
So I would expect kind of a little bit more of, not even, even if he gets beat on defense, I don't care if he just holds his hands up there. But I would kind of was hoping to see a little bit more post. Again, maybe that's why he needs more time under Krutwig's wing, learning how Krutwig moves the ball and looks. Because, again, Krutwig has such a great IQ, and I would hope to see that translate to Tom Welch. So, yeah, those are my two. What about yourself?
Yeah, that's cool because I'm going to say two completely different people.
Okay.
My biggest positive surprise is going to be Marquise Kennedy. I just think...
Told you.
I think for me, like, freshman, you just never know. At this level, you never know if they're going to be good or not. And I've just... Yeah, well, we didn't think he would be any good, and then look at him now. Okay, another topic, another day. But, I think Marquise, for me, I think the stuff that I've seen has been really, really impressive, the good stuff, and even the bad stuff... It's like still you see flashes of.
That's true.
Like just because he's missing shots doesn't mean they're not impressive. Doesn't mean that he's not getting himself open. And I think even in the four or five games, I've seen him improve. Even in the Coppin State game, I don't think that he was rushing too much. He doesn't have too many turnovers, which is good. And I think his three-point shot's improving. And I also think that defensively, we haven't even seen. I think we're gonna by the end of the year we'll have 10 crazy defensive highlights from him. I'm just really, really.
Oh, defensively, okay.
Yeah, blocks, like steals.
That. Yeah, he did have those two blocks early. That's right. Yeah. I didn't state that. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mentioned it. Where he had like one on the layup and then.
Yep.
One on
yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So I think Marquise Kennedy for me is just it's super fun to watch him play, and it's kind of a funny parallel him and Paxson. I think they're two completely different players, both like emotionally, like on the floor. Marquise keeps to himself. Paxson's like all up in everyone's face. And then just from a style standpoint too, they're very two different players. So it's kind of fun to watch them play together and play together well. On the flip side, it's got to be Lucas Williamson. I actually thought there's a chance he would be the best player on this team this year, just from what we've seen in the past and just kind of projecting him to be better. And I just haven't seen it. I mean, he was the leading scorer in the Furman game, but had a very disappointing, two disappointing games in a row. And then against UC Davis, only 13 points. It's not a bad game. There's a lot of room for him to grow, and he needs to, if we want to be a top two or three team in the conference, we need to have all of Cam Krutwig, what he's done so far, in addition to Tate Hall being really good, in addition Lucas Williamson being the second or third best player on this team. Well, right now, he might not even be the fourth or fifth best player on this team.
That's an interesting thing. I think this is a great way to kind of tie in these two games.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I just fell asleep.
Yeah.
Because I think the important thing is we're looking for that third guy to step up,
right,
which we tried to find last year.
Yep.
But the thing is, we don't also want to see the regression of guys we know can step up.
Yeah.
Yes, Cameron Krutwig's there. I think the St. Joe's game really opened it up for who might be that third guy. But again, it all might answer if we have a new second guy. There's so many things. Do I think if Lucas stopped shooting threes and did more give and goes, like he did the UC Davis game, yes, he will always be our two. Stick to defense, get another four steals a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd like to see.
That's the thing, is that we haven't seen that yet.
Well, this is the fourth game.
I know. I'm just saying from what we have.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing is, and I would like to leave it here, is what type of offense do we want to run? What team? We can't be the same team we were last year.
Nope.
We can't be the same. We have – our star is a center, and this is kind of the first time we've had this in a while, and we need to adjust to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a young freshman in Marquise Kennedy who, like you said, even when he makes mistakes, you're like, oh, he's moving too fast. He needs to be – patient and a high IQ, and I think that's what Krutwig has, but like we said, is we need other guys to step up and find that IQ level.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's a lot more we can see from Lucas, which is exciting, but as of now, I don't think that he has shown it yet, so hopefully, you know, hopefully we do see it. Hopefully we see it, and maybe actually the last year, his most impressive game came in the tournament that we played. Against Richmond, when we, what was the?
Oh yeah, Fort Myers.
Yeah, the Fort Myers tournament. So maybe that's a good thing for him. Hopefully,
yeah, maybe he needs a few games to get in.
Yeah,
but it's tough that we've lost too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the crazy thing. Yeah.
So I'll leave you with a fun stat here at the end. Cameron Krutwig right now averaging 7.3 assists per game. That's good enough to tie him for 12th in the country. So you know, maybe we'll have a little watch party and, or you know, just keep updated with that. But as of right now, just about top 10. So
Cameron Krutwig is tied for the 12th best point guard in the country.
Yep.
That's where we're gonna title this.
I like it. But I think that's gonna do it here from us from Podcast 63. What's the name of our podcast? I can't even remember. I'm so sick. So thanks for listening to me sound like absolute crap. And Lou sound like himself normally, but that's going to do it all for Podcast 63. Thanks for listening, and go Blurs.
Go Blurs.